Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Christina Moss. Welcome, Christina. It's so great to have you.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, as we often do, we're going to start at the very beginning. And can you tell me where you were born and a bit about your family background?
Sure. Okay. So I was born in a town called Kitchener, Ontario, which you probably wouldn't know about unless you knew a lot about Mennonites in North America. And that would sound actually very familiar to you because it is a bit of a Mennonite center. There's, you know, a big MCC headquarters there. There's easily two dozen Mennonite churches, all kinds, you know, very progressive Mennonite churches to Old Order with, you know, horses and buggies selling at markets. So the whole range. Now, I didn't live there very long. When I was 3 months old, my parents moved away to Regina, Saskatchewan, in Regina, Canada. So that my dad go to seminary because they were planning to be missionaries to the Ivory Coast in Africa. So we did 4 years of seminary training for my dad in Regina. And then we moved to Quebec City, Quebec for language training to learn French because the Ivory Coast is French speaking. And we were going to stay there, you know, a year, maybe two, just long enough to learn French and then be off. But there were, you know, a series of delays, and my mom got pregnant with my youngest sister, so that pushed the date off a bit. And then by the time we were thinking about getting ready to go again, my little brother got diagnosed with a learning disability, which made language acquisition challenging for him. And so the advice that my parents got at that point was that it was best to only speak one language at home. Whereas previously we'd been a very multilingual home. So my mom is actually German. She's still a German citizen. And I'm a dual citizen myself. So we were speaking a mixture of English and German at home. And then, of course, outside of school, we'd be speaking French. So it was a bit of everything. So then we started speaking only English at home. And for obvious reasons, then moving to Africa and living in Africa wasn't the best thing for my brother's learning and development. So we sort of stalled a bit.
Let me just back up a little bit. Are you the oldest?
Yes. Yes, I am the oldest.
And there are just three of you, or are there more?
There are four of us, actually. I have two sisters and one brother.
So where does that other sister fit in?
It's me and then my sister, Johanna. And her name might be familiar to you because you've all been praying for my niece, Celiana, who had quite the adventure earlier this year.
To ask you, please give an update on that.
Yeah, so she's been at home now for a few months after 80 days of her second hospital stay. And that was, you know, 80 days in the era of COVID, so no guests. They were just feeling lucky that both parents could be with her at the hospital because there was some question that that wasn't going to be possible. So, you know, she's not out of the woods. I mean, this kid is getting, you know, her meds 7 times a day, maybe more, depending.
What was her diagnosis?
So she has something called supraventricular tachycardia, SVT. So basically, she has this extra electrical pathway in her heart. And sometimes her heart will start beating faster and in an abnormal rhythm. And so she takes a lot of meds, but she's in an unusual case with that. The doctors have had a really, really tough time finding the right med combo for her. Usually it's not hard to find the right combination of medications to keep it in check. And she's posed a bit of a challenge. But she also doesn't seem to be in any sort of distress when she is in SVT. She has occasional episodes still because as she's growing, they keep having to adjust the dosages for meds. But she doesn't really seem to notice. She's still sort of smiling and laughing through it. So we definitely appreciate your continued prayers for her, but it is good for them to be home.
And is this something that she will probably have to deal with the rest of her life? Might she outgrow it? Do they have any idea?
So there is a surgery for that. It's called ablation therapy, where they go in and they seal off the extra electrical pathway. And that is barring a miracle where she outgrows it, which is theoretically possible, but unusual in a case as severe as hers. That's probably what they'd be looking at, but obviously to delay that for as long as possible. So for now, meds are keeping it in check. Obviously a miracle would be great. She just turned 7 months. So she celebrated 2 months, 3 months, and 4 months in the hospital. So she's just finally had more months celebrated outside of the hospital than in the hospital.
So that's sister number two.
Yeah.
And then
my brother Philip is next. And then my sister Rachel is the youngest. And she is a maternity nurse. So she's been a great asset to my other sister, Johanna. They live in the same town. Johanna and I like to say every new mom should have a Rachel in their life because she's been just a great source of support and information, right? Because she knows a lot more than the average person about birth and caring for a newborn.
And just getting back to the story that you were telling about your parents, what organization were they planning to go to the Ivory Coast with?
So they were with an organization called Worldwide Evangelization for Christ, or WEC, which is a kind of evangelical missions organization. So I didn't grow up in any Mennonite churches, but my dad grew up a Hutterite, which is another kind of Anabaptist, but communitarian. So I grew up in some ways very run-of-the-mill evangelical, but I would say that I got Anabaptist values from my dad.
So it must have been incredibly disappointing for them to have worked so hard and then not have been able to go. Did you get any sense of how they felt about that?
I don't think I noticed at the time how disappointed they were, because I was honestly relieved, because whoever was in charge of training the kids during missions training while the adults were being trained in another room did not do a good job. Because all I remember them doing is telling us about witch doctors. So I was just really, really scared. Obviously not remotely a good cultural introduction to, like, you know, the rich diversity of the African church. As it happens, the Ivory Coast ended up erupting in civil war not that much longer after we would have gone anyway. So we were kind of disappointed on this end, but our plans would have been disappointed and frustrated anyway. But we ended up staying in Quebec City, which was supposed to be this fairly brief stopover, for 7 years. So most of my elementary schooling and, putting down roots there, being part of our church, trying to figure out what came next.
Did you speak French? I'm assuming you were fluent.
Yes, I am.
So you got that much out of it, didn't you?
Oh, yes. No, it was a great place to grow up. We lived in a neighborhood that was, the rents were quite low. So it was a very diverse neighborhood, and especially a lot of refugees would come in when they were coming in from other parts of the world. So this was throughout the 90s that I was growing up there. And I feel like I've never been quite as aware of what was going on in the world since as I was then, because every time there was a crisis, somewhere else in the world, I would have a new round of playmates who had lived through it. So there were these girls in my neighborhood, and their father had died in the Rwandan genocide. And so their mom, every year when they took a family photoshop in, their father, or after the situation in Kosovo, had an influx of Kosovar refugees who came in and they played with us. So it was a good place to grow up, and it's definitely something I would love for my kids to experience too, to get to know kids from all kinds of places and not just kids who look like them and have the same life experiences as them. Yeah.
What came next?
Well, when I was 11 years old, we moved to New Brunswick, which is on the border with Maine on the east coast of Canada. Because my mom, from her years in Germany, had a connection with an organization called the Evangelical Sisterhood of Mary, which was a Protestant sisterhood headquartered in Darmstadt in Germany. And they run these things called prayer gardens all over the world. So think Stations of the Cross, but Protestant. So kind of sculptures and reliefs depicting the events from Jesus praying in the Garden of Gethsemane all the way to his resurrection. And they're sort of intended to be their outdoor spaces for prayer and contemplation. You can go through and they can ponder everything that Jesus went through and take time to pray at each of the different stations. And these gardens were mostly maintained by sisters who would be living in the different locations. And they had one in New Brunswick, but there were no more sisters left to take care of it. So at that point, they asked my family, knowing that we were sort of at a crossroads and not sure what came next, would we be willing to move and live there? So that was what we did. We moved there. And so it was, you know, giant house, giant grounds that we were responsible for maintaining. And in return, we got to live there free. So it was definitely a change, right? Because we went from living in Quebec City, which is pretty cosmopolitan, pretty diverse. When I was 10, you know, I could walk myself to the grocery store and I could walk myself to the library, give it another year or two, and I could have bought bus tickets and gotten myself anywhere. And then all of a sudden, we're in this, you know, town in rural New Brunswick with 600 people, and I can walk to church, I can walk to the corner store, and that's it. Otherwise, I'm at home. And thankfully, I was an introvert and I like to read, so I found plenty to do to occupy myself. And we joined a church there full of really lovely, really generous people from the get-go. So we were able to put down roots, and my parents have lived there now longer than anywhere else in their married life. They're still, I guess technically they moved to the next town over now, but they're still in that area.
Wow, what an amazing childhood.
Yeah, it was great to experience different places for sure.
You finished high school there at that last place?
Yeah, in New Brunswick.
What was going to come next and how did you make that decision?
So when I finished high school, I was still 17. So my parents kind of put their foot down and said that I could only apply to college nearby. So I got into a school in Fredericton, which was the capital city of New Brunswick. It's about half an hour's drive from where my parents were living at the time. And I went there and I started getting a history degree. And they sort of share a campus with the University of New Brunswick. So I went to a school called St. Thomas University. And it shares a campus more or less with the University of New Brunswick, which is where my now husband, Aaron, was attending. We probably would have never met except for the fact that we both joined a group called Navigators, which was a campus Christian group. And so we met through that. And then we were married when I was 20 and I had just finished my third year and was going into my fourth. So we finished off, I finished my undergrad, he finished his master's together. And then we both knew that we wanted to do more schooling. Specifically, I was very into Reformation history. And he wanted to go on in computer science. And the best place for us, certainly in Canada, was called the University of Purdue, because they have Conrad Grebel University College, which is one of the kind of Mennonite undergraduate institutions in North America. And so they've got a great library for early Anabaptist history. And it also, Waterloo has a really highly regarded computer science program. So we ended up there together.
Where was he from originally?
So he was born and raised in rural New Brunswick. So yeah, his whole family has lived within 30 miles, I think, of Sussex for maybe 50 miles. I don't know miles versus kilometers yet. But yeah, they've all lived very close to where he grew up for a long time.
Where did this love of history come from for you?
So what I wanted to do, what I was kind of interested in maybe, was studying theology, but you don't get scholarships for that. And I found that if I studied church history, I could come at a lot of the same questions, but I could get scholarships, to be honest with you. So that was a bit, you know, how it started. And I had a really, really great first year world history professor who really helped me to realize that I think I could be good at this. I think I like this. I'd like to go on. And then did a bit more kind of specializing in European history, which seemed like a good fit for my languages, right? Because I had English and French and German, and then I was also minoring in Latin at the same time.
What were you thinking sort of as your ultimate goal in terms of what you were going to do with this degree? Did you not worry about that?
So, you know, I mean, the dream was to be a professor, and I realized that it was a bit of a long shot. I mean, I had an undergraduate mentor who always used to say, it's a bit like pro sports, right? Like there are lots of really good people who never make it all the way to the big leagues. But if you understand that you probably will never make it to the big leagues and you're fine with doing what you enjoy for as long as you can get paid for it, then go ahead. But just, you know, just know that. the odds of getting, you know, a tenure track professorship are a bit like the odds of making the NHL, right, or the NFL. And that is advice that has served me well and that I probably should have heeded a bit more, because certainly the job market was already not great the few years that I was on it. Now with COVID, it's basically imploded completely. I have been very fortunate that I got to teach a couple of courses online over the summer back in Canada, but I'm also made peace with the fact that I loved what I do. I'm good at it, but I'm also not going to make the NHL, and it's okay. And I'm really curious to see what comes next. And I think I could be happy in any number of paths. So, and I have American work authorization as of, I think, a month ago. So
you do.
If you know of anyone, yeah. So if you know of anyone who could use someone who speaks French and knows a lot about Reformation history, I'm sure that's very in demand right now. So,
well, now the people of PMC know what to look
for.
There
you go. It's
really helpful. So that takes me to where I wanted to go next. We're going to jump ahead. How do you happen to be in Portland, Oregon at this point in your life?
So my husband studied computer science, which, unlike history, does still have some professor jobs. So he offered one at the University of Portland. And he really liked the campus. He liked the colleagues. I was apprehensive about moving out of Canada, but I thought, you know, if we're going to go to a place that shares our values, Portland seems probably as good a place as any in the States to try.
So what did you know about Portland before you moved here?
We got about 20 million Portlandia jokes, but we never really saw the show ourselves. We knew that it had a reputation for being very progressive politically. We knew that there was a lot of really beautiful nature around. So not a ton, really. We almost knew more about Portland, Maine, because that was a place a lot of people visited from New Brunswick. But, you know, we'd heard that it was a really great place to visit. We were pretty excited about progressive politics because it does take the same amount to vote a little bit if you're at least confident that the area is going to go that way and you're not going to be hurting the cause by not voting.
And how do you come to be at Portland Mennonite Church?
So as I mentioned, I was raised, you know, pretty run-of-the-mill evangelical. And then in 2016, which is a year that marks a turning point, I think, for a lot of people, just through a confluence of being, I mean, we were in Canada, so there's a lot fewer evangelical Trump supporters in Canada, obviously, than in the States. But it was still really, really disorienting to watch a lot of people who had, you know, taught us our values, because I grew up, you know, focused on the family supplications and things, line up behind this path that I thought was just so self-evidently destructive. And that was really hard. And then simultaneously, there was a situation going on at our church, and it's not my story to tell, really, but I'd been the kind of oddball liberal in our church already for a while because I was, you know, affirming, and those were, you know, not the official majority positions. And it was one thing when they weren't live issues, but it became painful and personal issues because of a church situation that was unfolding. And so at that point, it went from being a generally productive relationship where I felt like I was making a difference and maybe people could hear a different perspective from me to like, no, I don't think church should just be a fight every week, right? I want to be able to rest and I want to be able to learn. So we decided that the healthiest thing would be for us to find a church that lined up better with our values and where it didn't kind of feel like we were swimming team. So then we, that fall, called Sterling Avenue Mennonite Church in Kitchener. It's a bit famous locally because they broke away in 1924 from First Mennonite Church over the issue of bonnets, women's bonnets. So they've got this whole, progressive since 1924. although obviously women in First Mennonite aren't forced to wear bonnets now. But we found a really great community there that suited our values. And, you know, we loved the Mennonite commitment to peacemaking and to justice and to a really active and embodied faith and not just, oh, I have a personal relationship with Jesus and that's fine. But like, no, okay, yeah, I know that Jesus loves me, but now how do I live out the fact that I also know he loves other people? So that was really great for us. It was a chance to be challenged in our understanding of what it meant to live justly and to grow in that. And so we knew when we moved to Portland, we wanted to try the Mennonite church first, as long as they were affirming, because we didn't want to have that fight again. So, you know, we looked up PMC and we thought this looks like it could be a good fit. We live in North Portland. PMC is how siloed most Portlanders' lives are and mostly contained to their own quadrants. So when we got here, we thought, well, we'll give it a try for a few weeks. And if it doesn't click right away, we'll try something closer to home. But within, 2 weeks, it had clicked, right? We'd made the connection. It was just so comforting when we were in a new country and everything felt a bit unfamiliar to be singing from the same hymnals and to have that bit of familiarity. We really, really loved it. And we got connected with people quite fast. That was just a little over a year ago now.
And we would like to thank you for how quickly you did get involved with now during our virtual services, singing with your beautiful voice and leading worship, which now that I know more of your story, makes all the sense in the world.
Thank you. I think it's really kind of surprised me because I was doing the math the other day and realizing we've been doing church virtually at PMC for almost as long as we've been doing it in person. I think we've been doing it for 7 months.
Started in March.
Yeah, when the pandemic hit. So it would have been very easy, I think, to not feel quite connected yet and to just sort of fade out. It wouldn't have surprised people have reached out. I mean, I guess it helped that I had, my prayer request about my niece because people were expressing care and concern about that, which I really appreciate. And then, there were these chances to lead worship, to join a virtual choir. I also helped organize a craft exchange later in the summer, which was a lot of fun. And I really enjoyed participating in the random chats of kindness when those were happening. And those were kind of weekly phone calls where you got paired up with another member of the congregation. So I feel like I still have been getting to know people and getting to connect with people even digitally. So that's been a really great experience for me. And I think it speaks to how well PMC has welcomed me that I felt connected even though I just barely started going before we went virtual.
Well, we don't have very much more time, but tell me a little bit about how you're dealing with this pandemic other than at PMC.
Yeah. So, it is both comforting, but sometimes a little bit frustrating to see how much better my family in Canada is doing compared to here, because there has been a world of difference between how Canada has handled the pandemic compared to the US. And especially because my parents and Aaron's parents and my siblings are all in New Brunswick, which is pretty small, pretty rural, doesn't really have an international airport or anything. So they really have avoided the worst of it so far. And they're kind of at, I mean, they're still cautious. I think some businesses are mandating masks, although it's not a provincial mandate yet, but really have very many active cases. And I think most of those are travel linked. There's not really any community spread. And so they're fine to, you know, with each other without really feeling self-conscious or worried. And of course, you know, I never thought that my niece would be 7 months old and I still wouldn't have gotten to meet her. I actually had planned to go for the first time in March, just a week or two after everything shut down. So that's been a blow, right? Because I think sometimes, will she be walking? Will she be talking? How old will she be before I can see her? And I just don't know. But of course, there are so many great digital ways to keep in touch. And we have been doing that a lot. You know, I feel like I'm still very connected to my family between video chatting and talking on the phone. And I get, you know, all these photos and videos almost daily of updates of my niece. So I feel the separation, but I also still feel very connected. And in some ways, the fact that everybody went digital helped me almost feel more connected with my friends back home, right? Because for a while, then I was joining in on a virtual crafting circle or, you know, virtual book club. So I guess, you know, we're staying at home. I feel like I'm staying pretty connected to people. I wish I could see my family, but I'm glad they're okay. And that's about the quickest way I can summarize how I'm doing with the pandemic.
Well, there are obviously many, many more things that we hope to learn about you in the days, months, and years ahead. But for now, I'd just like to thank you so much for taking the time to share some of your story with us.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. We hope you discovered something new and feel more connected to your friends at Portland Mennonite. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.